Welcome to another broadcast of Bricks Behind the Ivy. Here's your host, Jeff and Sean.
Hey, Cub fans. Welcome back to another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy. I am always Jeff Rogowskis, a.k.a. Canada Cubs. With me once again is my fabulous co-host, Mr. Sean Hot Stove Cubbies Chapin. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited for today's podcast. I got on an appropriate jersey. This is a St. Cloud Rocks jersey. Lou Brock, when he was on the Chicago Cubs. And there's a reason behind that, Jeff, because we're doing the NL Central preview for the St. Louis Cardinals.
I'm actually a little jealous that you are dressed for the occasion. I am wearing a quasi-appropriate Cubs hat that's in St. Patrick's Day colors as we approach St. Patrick's Day weekend. But my jersey is less interesting in being a Kerry Wood jersey that I bought this year before the new Major League Baseball jerseys made it into circulation. This is a classic, majestic, hand-stitched, cool-based jersey, not the new MLB-issued Nike jerseys that are a nightmare. But this is not a jersey podcast episode. This is a NL Central preview episode and the last of our series before we talk about our beloved Cubs and what we think they're going to do in 2024. Tonight, we have the privilege of having David from Cardinals Live coming on to talk to us about the St. Louis Cardinals. He's the owner and writer for Live Cave Media, and he's the host of Heart of the Order podcast. You can find him at Cardinals Live on X/Twitter, whatever you may call it. David, thank you so much for joining us tonight to talk about the Cardinals.
Hey, thank you for having me. And Sean, I think Lou Brock, last week we saw Yadier Molina, and this week we saw Mark McGwire. All three of them look much better in Cardinal red.
I would agree with that 100%. It's nightmare fuel for me to see both of those historic Cardinals in Cubby blue.
Yeah, I know that.
Absolutely.
Both the situations are like for their kids, but it is a little weird in 2024 see Mark McGwire and Cub stuff, and Sammy Sosa still has not been welcomed back to Wrigley Field. Such a weird situation. And knowing that I'm looking at the tower of Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire memorabilia I have in my 1998 section of my Candid Cub Cave down here, and thinking one of those guys has been seen more recently in a Cubs jersey than the other, and it's never the one 9-year-old me would have assumed. What a world.
But yeah.
Dave, I want to start off our questions and discussion on the Cardinals and kind of look at their offseason. I know that there was a lot of highlights in addressing, you know, I believe their GM came out like right in the early season saying they wanted to get 2 to 3 starters for that rotation. So when I think of their offseason, I think of that. Can you talk about, you know, the pitchers they brought on and other guys they brought on and your thoughts in general of what they executed?
Well, Mo said early on, we're going to go pitching. And he did it. I would probably say if you inject any Cardinal fan with truth serum, we didn't get the three pitchers we were expecting going into the offseason. I think we're all pretty happy with Sonny Gray. I don't know if we're happy it being just Sonny Gray at the top of the rotation. Lance Lynn, another homecoming. I think most Cardinal fans are getting behind that one simply because former Cardinal, he has shown glimpses in the, you know, over the past few years of still being a strikeout pitcher. You know, he has that fastball. Rough year last year, ton of home runs. Kyle Gibson is the one that I think confuses, I think, a lot of us. I think you look at Lance Lynn or Kyle Gibson, but getting both of them, especially early on in the offseason with how this market went, it didn't move really fast. Seems like they jumped on those two guys very early. The claim at the beginning of the offseason was if they did not make the moves when they did, they wouldn't be available. It's just a weird thing to look at when you see how the market went. I don't know if that's there's truth behind that, but either way, they went out and got them. Tons of innings eaters. That's what we're being sold. Innings, innings, innings. We had a lot of strain on the bullpen last year. They also went out and addressed the bullpen. I really like our bullpen. The back end of it looks a little bit better. I love the Middleton signing. I love Kittredge.
For sure.
I think we're going to have a little bit more of a foundation. If you look at what the Cardinals did last year and the amount of games they lost blowing the lead sixth inning or later via that bullpen, I mean, we're talking about maybe the Cardinals being 500 at worst compared to really being a last place team. So I really do like the bullpen. The rotation does leave some to be desired. I know there's still plenty of time, but, you know, most Cardinal fans would tell you, you know, there's probably not a lot of strong belief that they're going to go out and make that deadline move either. But overall, I think the rotation is better with a healthy Sonny Gray right now than we had last year. So overall offseason, I give it a B-. They redid the rotation like they promised. They redid the bullpen like they promised. I just think they could have did a little better.
You know, David, one of the signings that just felt like it was fate was Brandon Crawford. I understand this is not the Brandon Crawford from like 2015, but to me, he's always looked like a guy that should be in Cardinals colors. And I know you got a young prospect as well. I think it's Wynn at shortstop. Is he to bridge the gap there, or is he, or do you see Crawford or Wynn taking over that spot at shortstop?
Yeah, I don't think there's no really bridge to gap. You know, we're going into the season with the full expectation that this is Mason Wynn's job. Most of the fan base is super excited about his defense potential first. We think he's going to be not just a good shortstop, an elite shortstop.
Sure.
You are going to look at someone that has a cannon for an arm. I don't know if you guys know this. He was actually a two-way player. He was a pitcher and a position player. The Cardinals took that half away, and we're going to focus on being a shortstop because of how good defensively and really the upside offensively that he did show. So, I mean, he has a cannon for an arm. He's going to make throws that I think are going to surprise people around baseball. I think last year during the Futures game, Turner had something kind of snarky to even say about his arm. Like, why do you need to throw that hard over there? Well, I don't know if you need to throw that hard, but he was proving that he can. He was showing off a little bit. I think it's Mason Wynn's job to lose. Now, here's where Crawford comes into play. Tommy Edman has been the projected backup shortstop. He's also was projected to be the starting center fielder. And this was when he was healthy. Things are looking murkier now. But you have center field, you have shortstop. These are two demanding positions. And Tommy Edman has been a Swiss Army knife for this club. And he's never griped, never complained. But the reality is the Cardinals looked at it, and with his health and probably missing the first month of the season, which we'll probably get into later, there was a clear hole that the Cardinals saw. Okay, we might need someone to back up Wynn. And if Edman isn't healthy, we don't have anybody, because Wynn is young. He probably will struggle offensively. He has at every level. He's a slow starter. And if the club gets in a precarious position early on in the season, the Cardinals cannot afford to dig themselves a hole. So if they have to have someone backing Wynn up and someone from Wynn to learn from, no better person than Crawford.
Yeah, Crawford can really pick it. I think that is obviously kind of a feature of what he is. And he was locking down that position defensively with, you know, some nice offensive upside on some of those even year Giant teams. And that's a guy that I've always enjoyed watching play defense when he was on the Giants. I think it's a nice, I always like, especially towards the back end of some of these guys' careers, the veteran signing and thinking what they bring to a ball club culture wise, work ethic wise, experience wise, you know, that's especially when you have, there's a decent number of young hitters mixed in with, you know, obviously two cornerstones, that there's a lot of value there for the players. Yeah, I think the, you kind of hit the nail on the head on the interesting component of the market and how slow it's gone and how quick. I feel the Cardinals rotation signings were bam, 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 right at the, I know, maybe even as early as mid-November, and feeling, especially a guy like Kyle Gibson, I can see like a fan base frustration. Just his numbers were not, are not something, you know, you write home about. Sonny Gray, obviously a different story. You know, he's not a spring chicken, but he has produced very well for a Cincinnati Reds team and then went off and did the same thing for the Twins. The question for him has always been health. That's his seasons have been derailed by health. But I think this is a question that's come up on all of our previews officially, as this will be the last of this series. The one thing I think that's really interesting about this division specifically is the hanging presence of pitching need in this free agent marketplace and the lack of interest of anyone in the division of pouncing on that. Do you think the Cardinals, I think the answer is, do you think the Cardinals are entertaining the idea of Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell? And just kind of your thoughts on what would happen in theory if one of the teams in this division took the leap and added that to their rotation, like how different the story would be going into opening day.
Well, I mean, any more pitching acquisition, whoever it were to be, barring maybe the Pirates, would instantly make them, in my opinion, the at least early favorite. You do have Montgomery, you do have Snell. The waters have been murky, really. The Cardinals early on were checking in on Montgomery's market. Even after signing Sonny Gray, there was rumors that they were in on Cease, at least, you know, preliminary talks. They checked in with Miami starting pitching. They're probably thinking the heavens, they haven't made any moves based on Cabrera's MRI results. We'll see what that looks like. But I mean, I think most of these teams have been flirting and really not pulling the trigger. I just think there's a weird stagnation going on in the market, that there could be more to it. There could be something that's going to be percolating, and it might not make us so happy down the line as we maybe go into another CBA. The players are not going to be happy. You have your main guy, Scott Boras, is going to lead the charge for a correction. The TV revenues have been an excuse all off season. Mm-hmm. Dodgers don't seem to be worried.
Yeah.
So right. Padres either, even with the, this, you know, their late passing of their owner and then loan talk and defaulting or whatever that conversation was early winter.
Sure.
You know, they're still making moves and trying to be competitive in their division. So then, you know, that kind of circles back to ours. It's almost like there's been a mutual agreement that we're all going to be, you know, gentlemen and not leave one another in the dust and let the best man win.
Right.
And, you know, I think the Cardinals and the Cubs are probably the most egregious. The Cardinals, while we are a quote unquote mid-market team, I think we can all agree that they draw the type of fan base and they generate the TV ratings usually in the top three of all of baseball. There's money to be had. The Cardinals may not be able to operate like the big boy Dodgers or the Yankees, but we most certainly can be doing the moves that the Padres or just right under what the Phillies or even what the Rangers have done. The Cubs are in a big market, mm-hmm. and they do not operate like a big market team. They have the power to go out and really showcase their prowess in the division. They just don't. Lucky for us. So I just think that really when you look at the division as a whole, it's a step above the AL Central. I think it's going to be competitive on the lines of we're going to all be engaged for most of the season. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be must-watch TV? I guess for all of us outside, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. And I think it's not unfair criticism of the Cubs situation. I think a lot of Cub fans, and I swing wildly on financial expectation, valuation, and how that interchange works in regards to baseball budget. But you look at the Cubs being a top two like expense for tickets next to the Red Sox. You look at the TV network, obviously not the revenue they expected, but they still have their own TV network, which they can leverage. They have the sports book. They own 90% of that neighborhood now. There's no revenue sharing, not the same type at the extreme as other sports. So you look at the Cubs and you think they should be able to buy their way to a division every year in this division, given their financial might, and they aren't. And
No.
that is a question I think that comes up regularly, especially in the echo chamber that is X slash Twitter, and the frustration. I understand, they're reading old tweets and things of mine of wanting the Cubs to get Prince Fielder and Albert Pujols when they were both free agents. Like that, I mean, I understand that's probably a ridiculous thought and sentiment, but now that the way that they're designed and structured being worth, four over four bill, like that shouldn't necessarily be an unrealistic possibility. And when you're a team like the Cubs, there is the luxury of being able to make a financial mistake like that and not cripple your franchise. I think that is something that, I think this fan base is struggling with, as on paper and evaluating, like, this roster hasn't turned over into this playoff juggernaut. They, if anything, raised the floor slightly and brought in a manager that takes floors and turns them into gold. So I and it's yeah, it's tough to evaluate this Cubs team because I understand they have a lot of young talent and they're trying to evaluate that. I think there is hesitancy is not the word I want to use because I'm not an insider in any capacity, but the cliff that I think that was tied to spending before they had it, as like assets got distressed or flipped, and like modernizing the ballpark and making sure it's in the landmark committee, like hitting all the federal landmark guidelines, that cost way more. They used a lot of cash assets to buy around the ballpark. And then 2020 happened, and all those things are supposed to meet in this beautiful picture. And they fronted some money to make 2016 happen. And then I think they had to play catch up. So then, Theo empties this minor league cupboard, and they turned into a financial juggernaut. But like they were an $800 million valuation when they were bought by the Tribune to the Ricketts family. Like things have changed dramatically, but valuation and liquidity are two completely different things. And it is frustrating. I don't think it's like an average fan's concern of, seeing $4 billion and going to a ball game that's, average $55 a ticket and watching, it's tough to say there's a guy in the Cubs right now that sells jerseys at a high rate. There's not a superstar on the team. I feel like this is a topic for an entire podcast
Yeah,
on a Cubs perspective.
as a Cardinals fan, I know this is a Cardinals segment for you guys. As a Cardinals fan, I wish you guys would. I really do believe that if you guys started moving the needle, so would the Cardinals. And history
Fair
kind of
point.
proves that. If you look at back when the Houston Astros were roaming the NL Central, the Cardinals and the Astros really had a nice back and forth. There was moments where the Cubs kind of mixed in there, but overall it was a back and forth between Houston and St. Louis. And a lot of the guys that Houston had, I mean, we remember those early late 90-2000 lineups. The Cardinals went toe for toe, and then Houston left the division, and it really left the Cardinals and the Cubs as the premier teams in the division. And I say that, understanding Milwaukee has take, you know, they've took taken strides over the past decade. But overall, I mean, those are the two, top tier teams left. And we, other than your World Series run and your stacked roster there, we had our moments in the 15s, the 16s, the 17s. But overall, I don't see us pushing each other as much as I wish we would. And that's really opened the door for teams like the Brewers and the Reds and even the Pirates having their flash in the pan. When both of our ownerships and markets could dictate, not, I don't want to be pompous here and say leave them in the dust, but theoretically, we are both our organizations could outspend everybody else in the division and make it a two-man race almost every year, and we don't.
Yeah, it's the Oakland A's effect, you know, mm-hmm. And I mean that in both of the ways it could be put contextualized here is, you know, the Oakland A's did so little in a division of giants and like in some of the runs in 2000s. And, you know, kind of what you said, I don't know if it just opened the door to the logical possibility of doing more with less when you see a team like the Brewers like turn out a winner for that stretch of time that they did with very low payroll, that it went to the brains of the GMs and the ownership groups of, hey, we don't have to outspend our competition. We have to outsmart them, which is just, it feels like a very different brand of baseball in this division where, you know, obviously you look at the AL East and the NL West with the Dodgers outspending the world this offseason. You know, we all know Uncle Stevie Cohen is just a sleeping giant going into next year. You know, probably learned that he can't use his stocks to buy his fantasy baseball dream team. It doesn't necessarily work out the way you think it will, but I mean, I expect him to really just open the cupboard for Juan Soto and just make everyone feel silly next year. So it is definitely, I think, an interesting dynamic that I think you've brought up of, you know, the Cardinals and the Cubs, I felt like was this rivalry that, you know, for a long time, the Cubs were like little brother and we're, you know, we thought this is a rivalry and you guys were like, a rivalry involves someone who wins every so often. And like my entire childhood is defined by that not happening. And then, you know, 2015, you know, that's why that playoff series felt so huge, because I felt like there was a lot of design in the Cubs roster to beat the Cardinals, to beat this like team that had stars that grew from the farm system and still bought players and still brought in players to kind of finish teams. And finally, like beating the Cardinals in the 2015 NLDS was like getting over that hump of the team that we couldn't figure out how to beat in a market we should have been dominating. But yeah, then since then, it's just been, we were okay with that. Like, mm-hmm. There was no push further. There was no, and, you know, there's obviously just thinking that core was going to develop differently and, you know, maybe holding on to your chips a little too long. And yeah, when you hold on to your chips and you empty the cupboard, like, there's no bank to go back to, you know, to replace the chips you're going to spend. And yeah, it was just, I think what Jed is trying to do, and it's extremely difficult, and I'll give him props for taking over this job, you know, effectively in 2021 and putting the Cubs in a top four farm system ranking without complete disarray at the major league level is impressive. But I think that there is just a shiny number of missed opportunities of like maybe being the team that tried to trade for Juan Soto this offseason, being more aggressive on some of the higher end free agents when they were available, always talking about waiting, you know, for a certain player to make the free agent. Like I remember for probably a year and a half hearing about how the Cubs were going to be right all over Rafael Devers. Those guys don't make the market anymore.
No,
they don't get there. They sign an extension, or what they're asking for is so ludicrous, they go hire Scott Boras and wait. Like that's so it's a very weird dynamic.
Yeah. And, you know, just that quick little segue there. I would say a lot of the gripe that Cubs fans have line up pretty similar to a lot of the gripes that Cardinals fans have. as far as wants, needs, and expectations.
Yeah, and I think that's dynamically changed since 2016 for the Cubs, especially as the, I think the Cardinals, as much as, you know, the Cub fans talk about Cardinal devil magic and this farm system that always like produces these players, and but really from afar, it's a team that has, last year is an anomaly, the outside data factor, the small sample size alert, as we say on here, of a team, a Cardinals team finishing below 500. It just hasn't, like, it has happened, like, on the number of times it's happened in my lifetime as a baseball fan, we can count on one hand, where on the other side of the spectrum, the number of times the Cubs made the playoffs in my lifetime, you could count finally on two hands. And it's just so different.
And like the spoiled brats we are, I assure you, we hated every minute of it last year.
Oh, I bet.
Every minute.
So kind of going into this season and looking at the Cardinals roster, I'm really interested to hear what your opening day lineup looks like. I know you got the corners taken care of with Arenado and Goldschmidt, but what kind of lineup do you think that the Cardinals are going to put together on opening day?
Well, there's some injury concerns. Mm-hmm. So we have Lars Nootbaar, who has a couple fractured ribs because he's silly. And we don't know if he's going to make opening day. The hope is he will. So if Nootbaar is healthy, he will be the opening day, probably either left or right fielder. If he's not, things are going to get murkier because it's already been reported Tommy Edman will not be available. So now center field's a question mark. So really all we have for sure, Jordan Walker, penciled in, pinned in, however you want to do it. He's likely probably going to be in right field, so we'll throw him in right. We have, like you said, Arenado over at third, Mason Wynn at short, and it's going to be one of Brendan Donovan, Nolan Gorman at second. Whoever isn't going to be second base will probably be DH, so we'll throw Brendan Donovan at second, Nolan Gorman, DH. First base, we'll have Paul Goldschmidt, and catcher, Wilson Contreras. The question marks will be dictated probably in the last second half of spring training. We have a young outfielder. His name is Victor Scott II. He had probably entered spring training as just an opportunity for the Cardinals to get a look. He has opened some eyes as well as opportunity has arisen. This is someone that from last year into fall league stolen over 100 bases. The speed is legit. Defense is legit. The only concern for him is can his bat handle major league pitching? He hasn't seen a game of AAA baseball. He has a rare talent, and there are expectations that this guy could steal more than 80 bases at the major league level. He profiles as a leadoff hitter. So does Brendan Donovan with his on-base capabilities, but the speed is vastly different. So if he keeps doing what he's doing, I think there is a small percentage chance he could be your opening day center fielder for the St. Louis Cardinals. Then you have Alec Burleson, who is a hefty fella, but he can hit the hell out of a ball. He is likely profiled best first base DH, but opportunities just aren't there on this roster. I looked at Alec Burleson as a piece the Cardinals should have explored trading during the offseason because there is a ton of value and potential there. And most people around baseball see it, including the Cardinals. I think there's a chance that if Nootbaar is not healthy, your outfield will be Walker, Scott, Burley. And Scott's speed kind of helps with both of those. Walker is very athletic, but he has not been great out in the outfield. He worked all offseason. I'm still 50-50 on if it's going to work out. I personally think Walker might be the reason why Paul Goldschmidt is not extended. We'll see. Right field or left field, Burleson. They'll have to play with it a little bit. One key guy I have not mentioned, his name is Dylan Carlson. Dylan Carlson has had a huge fall from grace. He was once a highly touted prospect in the Cardinals organization. John Mozeliak, president of baseball operation for the St. Louis Cardinals, once described him as, "You'd have to pry him from my cold, dead hands," when asked early on if he'd trade him while he was a prospect. I'm not so sure he is in cold, dead hand territory anymore. I'm not so sure that the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals has him high on the depth charts of him playing. The only way I see him getting the nod is if they just don't want Burleson out in the outfield, or they just don't want to rush Scott. But if all of that remains true and they want to break camp with the best roster right now, I would say Dylan Carlson is still your fourth outfielder. So we'll see.
So I have a Cubs-specific question for the opening day roster. There was a lot of noise last year about Wilson Contreras and the pitching staff. I know that, you know, it started one way, and then there was like the weird support stage, and then it kind of slipped in another direction where they were, you know, supporting him but taking away starts from him and behind the plate. You know, yeah. I think objectively my concern for Wilson Contreras when the Cubs were talking extension with him was, you know, how catchers age, the demand of the position behind the plate, and in fairness, the emotional component that he brings to the field. You know, I think there was times in which, and I know this is one of your favorite players, Sean, so like cover your ears so you don't get sad.
Okay.
I felt that Javier Baez had an effect on Wilson Contreras, in which like Wilson thought he could do things Baez could do, but like the athleticism was clearly different. And at times it was very frustrating watching him run himself out of an inning trying to be Javi Baez. And I think a lot smarter players would have known that Javier Baez is Javier Baez. But then let's ask the Tigers what that definition means. And I'm sure they're having a little bit of buyer's remorse. But
a lot of that.
So going into 2024, is he the everyday catcher, or is he slotted in DH? Does he have pitchers he's been working with? What's the situation there?
Yeah, so let's rewind the clock, and we go through last year. The Cardinals, I think, are a fool, not for signing Wilson Contreras. I was a big fan of the move. I think they don't they said what their intentions were, went out and did it, and then were surprised by the intentions. They went out and they got an offensive first catcher, who, by the way, Wilson Contreras did that and more. His second half was phenomenal. Even going through the BS that he had to ordeal. I also think there are some pitchers that were on that staff that may have been a little mouthy. And there was already personality issues on that staff for the Cardinals before Wilson Contreras was even a part of it. And then you had the departure for Yadier Molina, who is a Hall of Fame catcher, by the way. I don't know how you fall on that line of the fence, but it's true. And we have a guy who essentially led the organization for years. I mean, Yadier Molina did everything. And when I say everything, I mean, he did everything. He essentially adopted Dave Duncan's pitching book. He had notes on almost every single starting pitcher, reliever, incorporated that into future technology as he grew with the iPad. He had books on almost every minor league staff that was coming up or any team that we were getting ready to face. He had these pitchers. The offense broke down like a book of what they struggle with. He did advanced scouting for the hitters against their pitchers, for their pitchers against their hitters. I mean, Yadi did everything. And I think a lot of people don't understand the vast amount of stuff that he did to prepare the team day in and day out on both sides of the ball. The Cardinals did not replace that after signing Wilson Contreras. It's essentially like you got a TV, and your TV is a combo DVD and TV player, and then you just go out and you go buy a TV, and then you realize, oh, we need to go buy another DVD player because this isn't all in one anymore. The Cardinals didn't have everything all in one anymore. Wilson Contreras wanted to be a catcher and do catcher duties. How he saw them and likely how he did them his entire career with the Cubs, the Cardinals viewed that position differently because of who they had there prior. Sure. And the pitching staff did so too. And I don't believe their preparation was up to par for what Wilson Contreras did because of what the pitchers expected him to do. Essentially, like, what do you mean? What the hell do you want me to do? And it was just a mess. I don't really think the defense was an issue. I think it was overblown. The offense was there. Attitude-wise, look, I don't know what, you know, he smashed the cooler out of frustration, and I think he, maybe smashed something in the clubhouse once during the stretch of it. But overall, how he handled it from top down, dude is a class act. He is probably a fan favorite now. And there's not many Cubs that have gone from you to us that have become fan favorites. Just recent example, Dexter Fowler. I mean, he was never adored here in St. Louis. In fact, I think most of us celebrated when we were able to get that off the books there. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful. It's just the nature of the adornment the fans have already rallied around Wilson Contreras, and the stuff that he went through, I think played a role. I think you have a fan base that is looking at ownership in the front office and seeing right through the BS and being cognitive to understand what the need was. You didn't sign Wilson Contreras to be Yadier Molina. You signed Wilson Contreras to hit 20 home runs and drive in 80. And that was the goal. That was the goal. And he was everything as advertised. And if you expected something else, that's on you. So I think he's going to get, I don't know, maybe 100, 110 starts. The thing with the Cardinals is they do have a young guy named Ivan Herrera, who is coming up a lot quicker and a lot more polished than the Cardinals, I think, expected. To be truthful, I think if Ivan Herrera was where he was now last offseason, I don't know if the Cardinals even make a move for a catcher. I don't know if Wilson Contreras is probably a Houston Astro.
Yeah.
But there was not a high belief that he would be ready. There was always some maturity questions. His pitch framing was awful. His offense was supposed to be good, but he showed early he couldn't hit major league pitching. Well, that's 180. I mean, he has took strides. He played winter ball. He played for Panama. He single-handedly led the team offensively. He looks so good. So the Cardinals are going to want to get him some games. They'll allow Wilson to probably DH a few, and you know, they'll play with the lineup. They'll get a little bit more lenient on how they want to play with it, but I imagine we're going to see quite a few games caught by Ivan Herrera. I still think Wilson Contreras gets the bulk, and of course I believe he'll be the opening day catcher.
So with that kind of settled out, you know, with Wilson, and I think, yeah, he did manage that very well. I thought that was a situation he might have struggled with. It was, you know, from afar, it just was so bizarre. It just the messaging around it and the fan, like the fanfare of like removing him as catcher, and then like then the opposite fanfare of like, no, that's not what we said. And I mean you hit the nail on the head. Like Yadier Molina, you know, maybe wasn't an offensive star every season, and you know what he brought to the game numbers wise, you know, was, you know, solid numbers for a player, but like what the intangibles off the field and what he did for that pitching staff for as long as he did it, similar to, you know, his brothers, his family, the Molina brothers have just been a long, successful catching group of human beings. And it's just, it's absolutely unfair to put that expectation on Wilson Contreras, who, you know, if you're going to hit major league pitching at this age, you have to take some of that game plan time and shift it into planning for a certain type of starter. And being as good a hitter as he is, that's going to take time, and, you know, something's got to give. And I know before he left, that was the commentary around the Cubs, was they had told him that they wanted him, you know, to spell at catcher if they extended him. There was some thought process of like shifting him to first base for some starts, like to keep the bat, and having him play outfield for some spell to keep the bat in the lineup. But he was insistent he wanted to be a catcher, and, you know, he's got a very good arm, and the framing has gone up and down of being loud and being quiet, and, you know, some of his emotions get in the game and he can be really dialed in and sometimes he's not. And that variability, especially in, well, we're still in the age of pitch framing, was something game plan wise the Cubs weren't really interested in doing. And I think, having to inherit the Yadier Molina, you know, pedigree was an unfair expectation on any catcher, not just Wilson Contreras.
And if you look at it from a standpoint too, you had Jack Flaherty going into his contract year. He's been hurt. He's had a partial pec tear. Last year was super important to him. You had Jordan Montgomery, who came over for the Yankees. It was his contract year. He credited Yadier Molina in essentially turning him into the pitcher he is today. So he had a lot of, you know, positives working with Yadi, and then coming up, big season. Then you also had other pitching injuries. You had Steven Matz, who's been in and out, and you had Adam Wainwright, who last year was just, don't even want to talk about it. You had a lot of problems, and you had a lot of guys that had high expectations for themselves. And then when you're not being cohesive with the catcher and the team's doing horrible and you don't have that built relationship already, fingers start kind of getting pointed. And I think that's super important when you look at who the Cardinals brought in this year. You got Kyle Gibson, who knows who Kyle Gibson is. You got Lance Lynn, who knows who Lance Lynn is. Sonny Gray knows who Sonny Gray is. These guys, Miles Michaelis, vet, these guys know who they are. They don't need Wilson Contreras out there calling a knuckleball when none of them have a knuckleball. And it flustered them. Because Lance Lynn's going to look at Wilson Contreras and tell him, hey, fastball. And he's going to throw a fastball. These guys are going to, I think, bring something to the table 23 staff did not have. And that's poise, experience, and just gristle. And I think that's going to work well with Wilson Contreras. Because I think what Wilson needs is, I think he needs a relationship. I think he needs partnership. I think he needs communication. If a pitcher can tell him how he likes to attack certain things, then I think he's going to memorize that and he's going to roll with it and he's going to call the game based on that feedback. I don't think Wilson Contreras has the capacity to go five pitchers down the rotation five games later, look at those offenses and figure out how we're going to pitch to them per every single pitcher. He's just shown that he can't. But what he can do is build friendships and relationships. And if you can build that with each starter, and each starter sits down with a pre-game, pre-series meeting, and they go over how they want to pitch these lineups, I think Wilson Contreras is going to be a lot better at not just pitch calling, pitch framing, defense, just overall. He's just going to be a better catcher. And I think that's going to translate to even being better offensively, because he's not just Wilson Contreras on the Cardinals anymore. Wilson Contreras is becoming a leader in the clubhouse. He's becoming a voice in the clubhouse. And he has pretty much so far this spring had taken charge of this rotation. Sonny Gray and him literally met day one of camp, threw to each other. Sonny Gray was saying what he wanted to throw out loud. Wilson Contreras was following his movements. And they were talking. They were telling each other, nasty, that looked good. I like that. Throw it again. Sonny Gray would tell him, I don't like throwing that at that count. Let's throw this. Wilson Contreras, great idea. Let's do it. Throw it nasty. So you're seeing that, you know, that relationship and that situation build. And I think that those types of pitchers in this rotation is going to help Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he needs that strong personality in the pitching staff to kind of lead that direction. I think that makes a lot of sense. And why we're on the subject of pitching, you've already hit on the starting rotation for opening day. What about the bullpen? What's your thoughts on the bullpen? Who do you see out there on the back half, closing out games? And how do you feel about the bullpen in general?
I feel very confident in the bullpen. If I look at kind of our team as a whole, and I'll finish with the bullpen. Like if you're talking like 1 through 30, I think the offense has a chance to be in that 12 to 9 range of offensive ability. Anything higher, the Cardinals are going to be cooking. But I'll be lenient, and they can be in that that 12 to 9 ranking range. I think we're going to be okay. The pitching, I think, is going to be on the lower end. I think they're going to be, you know, maybe between 15 and 20. I think we're going to get good innings. I think we're going to give up a lot of runs. I think our offense is going to have to win games. Mm-hmm. And then our bullpen's going to have to come in late. I think the Cardinals have an opportunity to have a top 10 bullpen. And here's why. So you have your back end guys kind of solidified. And that's going to be Gallegos. Your closer is going to be Ryan Helsley. You're going to have Kittredge, who can be versatile. I'm sure Middleton's going to get late innings, but he's also versatile. You have Jojo Romero from the left side. And then you also have your middle pieces. And where the Cardinals got in trouble last year was those middle pieces. Why? So you had Stratton, you had Verhagen, you had guys under contract. You like to have guys under contract that are more towards that back end high leverage. The Cardinals had a lot of mediocrity under contract that there's nothing you can do. If you get gassed out, there's no options available. You can't intermingle your bullpen. You can't call up, send down. You can't be flexible. You get stuck and you get gassed. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals now have flexibility. So you have your key guys in the back who are, when right, filthy. You have your flexibility in the middle. There's some new names in that bullpen that look pretty promising. There's this guy named O'Brien. We got him from the Seattle Mariners. He's pumping 97, 98 gas. He's going to make the team. Might as well pin him in. He looks absolutely filthy. You guys are going to hate facing him, I think. He's going to look pretty good. He's going to be a household name, at least in the Central Division, pretty quick. You have young guys, Matthew Liberatore, Zach Thompson, they're kind of fighting for that six man long reliever. But overall, there's not a lot of competition going on in the bullpen as far as who's probably going to be solidified. We got that Rule 5 pickup from Boston, Fernandez. He looks pretty good. But overall, what the Cardinals have done is they've added swing and miss to their bullpen. They didn't really do it in their rotation, other than outside of Sonny Gray, but they added a significant amount of swing and miss. And if you look at the Cardinals, I touched on this earlier when we started talking, the Cardinals, I think, led the majors in blown saves out of the bullpen past, I think it was either the sixth or seventh inning. It was like over 23, 24-ish games. The bullpen was a huge issue. If they could cut down, if they eliminated half of those games, they're a 500 team. If they actually win some of those games, they're fighting for the division. The Cardinals looked at the bullpen as, if we can get to the sixth, seventh inning and our guys can get us to that sixth and seventh inning, talking about starters, we might actually have a chance to win with our lineup. I think our bullpen's going to look good. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, as a stat lookup, I did check the Cardinals are up there with 28 blown saves, 56% save conversion in 2023, horrible, which puts them not as close to the bottom as I expected them to be. The Rockies and surprisingly the Guardians were at the bottom of that list. And then also close to the bottom was the Rangers, which,
yeah,
know, that's weird.
Sorry, go ahead.
They struggled early in the beginning of the season. They racked those numbers up pretty quick, the Rangers, and then they solidified it after the deadline. The Cardinals kept it chugging all year. They were just consistently bad.
Yeah, I think, you know, losing those types of games, like, they add up early. I think in an audit of 2023, maybe not necessarily blown saves in the traditional stat, but the leads that fell apart in games for the Cubs, you know, those ended up making the difference between them being the last wild card team because they missed by one game. But, you know, let's not open an old wound. I think we've talked about, you know, at length your thoughts, and I'm kind of getting the feeling the strengths of this Cardinals team is probably potentially offense and then the bullpen. What would you say, you know, I think getting a feeling that the weakness is potentially the rotation, and one that I think that I would point to is outfield defense. What would you say those are the weaknesses? Do you have any other weaknesses you're concerned about with the Cardinals?
Well, you know, I always worry about the lineup being consistent. The Cardinals have had a very hot and cold lineup, and throughout Major League Baseball, you have hot spells and cold spells for, you know, players, lineups in general, but
sure,
there's been a trend for the Cardinals where when you're hot, you're hot, you're cold, you're cold. And that extends to Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt. What we need, my concern, outfield defense, absolutely. That's an A concern on level. Rotation's an A concern as well. But another A concern is the production from our cornerstone players. You need Nolan Arenado to be Nolan Arenado, and you need Paul Goldschmidt to be Paul Goldschmidt. There's a lot of finger pointing last year of what went wrong with the St. Louis Cardinals. Nolan Arenado is right at the heart of it. He had a horrible April. His second half picked up, but he defensively, offensively, he's not what the Cardinals envisioned when they traded for him. The year before, he was outstanding, but really two out of the 3 years that we've had Nolan Arenado, I think we could fairly say he hasn't fully been his normal Nolan Arenado self, and that's still in prime years. The Coors effect and all that. And in no way am I saying Nolan Arenado hasn't been phenomenal, but you know, there's levels to this. Nolan Arenado is an elite player. I'm going to judge him as such. So Paul Goldschmidt hasn't caught up to a fastball since 2021, his MVP year. And 2022 was mediocre at best. I think he finished with a lower OPS than he did in 3 years, which is still, you know, above average for a baseball player, below Paul Goldschmidt's expectations. Yeah. And then last year was just rough. He did some work at Driveline. I know he's changed some of his mechanics to maybe try to be quicker through the zone. I know Nolan Arenado has really focused on kind of wanting to be more of a pull hitter. I think he was a good pull hitter in 2023, he got away from it. He tried spreading the ball more. I think he has found that his power plays better in Busch and a lot of the central ballparks by pulling the ball. I think he's going to try to be a little bit more pull heavy. I think that's more productive for his swing in general and what it's transformed over the years into. So I have hope that Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt have better seasons, but I would put that right up there on a concern as well. So, yeah, outfield defense, pitching rotation, and our guys being our guys.
And that's for consistency's sake. We have asked all of our pundits, as an outsider, what do you see as the strength of the Cubs team in the division, and what is their Achilles heel? What is their weakness?
You know, I would say, so the Cubs, I think, are, like, I don't think the Cubs are great at anything, but they're not bad at anything. They just look like a consistent team. And what I mean by that is I don't see any, like, glaring major holes. Yeah, you can look at areas like the lineup, certain positions, the rotation in general, the loss of Stroman, I think it's going to pan out to be a little bit bigger. But you just look at the team overall, they're going to chug along. I don't think they're going to have a lot of ups. I don't know if they'll have a lot of downs. And when you look at the division, I think Cincinnati has a risk of having a lot of ups and downs just because of their youth. I think Pittsburgh, we saw what an up and down looks like. And then the Cardinals, if the Cardinals get off to a slow start and that mojo doesn't go the way it's going based on their last year, you know, they can say they want to move on all they want. That last year is still on the shoulder of those players. Mm-hmm. So, like, what the Cubs have is they have a new manager, Craig Counsell. They got a solid team who Craig is probably going to get a little bit more out of each and every one of them. That's what he's being paid for. And you got Belly back, which I think was very important. Without Belly, I wouldn't be super stoked.
Neither would I.
Yeah, we're on that train. That was a scary,
very
scary
important
situation.
Signing. So, I think Cubs are going to be consistently decent throughout the division. And I think in order to beat them, a team has to be a little hot, more than expected. And I think if you can find a team that can find that next drive and it's not the Cubs, then I think that's the team that would ultimately surpass Chicago. But in my point of view right now, just starting the season, Chicago is the team to beat because of that consistency.
Interesting.
That goes a long way over 162.
No, that's a really good point. And I think one that I've been making on a few of these episodes now is that I feel like the 15-2 stretch wins this division because of how tight it is. And for the same reason, the 2-15 stretch loses this division. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very tight. And yeah, I think you put it very well of there's a Reds team that might have the highest ceiling offensively and maybe with the rotation, but
they got a low floor.
Yeah, that floor is scary because it's young. You don't know what you're getting. And, you know, Pittsburgh, I think, is interesting. Consistency.
They're not quite there yet.
Yeah, they're almost there. Yeah, they're probably a 2026 team that I think we talk about once Skeens gets, you know, a taste in 25 and, you know, some of the other rotation pieces, and Tamir Johnson ends up taking over second base and maybe a trade in there to bolster that lineup. But yeah, I think, you know, when you look at the teams in this division, they are very close. And, you know, I think when even looking at the win-loss projections, which is going to be our final question for tonight, we've been looking at, you know, betting odds of over under a wins, and the Cardinals are pegged as the favorite right now at 84.5. The second team on that list is the Cubs is at 83.5. And the shocker to us when we recorded the episode
super
is
weird.
The Reds are at 82.5. I did not expect them to be that high, which made
a sexy pick.
They are. They absolutely are. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen a few baseball pundits today that, you know, that Twitter trend of like, name an unpopular opinion, and like, oh, the Reds are going to win the Central. I saw four of those tweets today. And maybe it's because my friend Andy, who was on the pod, is the one retweeting them onto my timeline, or or maybe, you know, yeah, they have a lot going. They have a front end ace potential, and if Lodell is healthy, you know, that rotation has got a 1-2 punch, and their bats are really interesting. But yeah, I mean, they've got a huge floor, like just a very scary floor that a call could fall apart. So given that, we'll go around. We'll start with you, David, on the over under. What do you think over under on 84.5 for the Cardinals in 2024?
Over.
Yeah, I think it's a fair bet given, you know, how they're constructed. Sean, over or under?
David, I'm going to have to take the under on this one. And just a few reasons why. And we hit on some of them. I think a lot of things have to break right for the Cardinals to get 85 wins this season. I'm not saying they're going to get way under the 84. I'm just not comfortable with giving 85 wins to the Cardinals. I think they have some players, a healthy Newt Barr, Donovan and Walker taking the next step. That scares me as a Cubs fan. That scares me a lot. And then you're going to need bounce back years for Arenado and Goldschmidt, even though Goldschmidt at the age of 35 still put up pretty decent numbers at 35. So overall, I think it's going to be under that 34.5, but not like we're not talking, I'm saying in the 70s. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay.
Yeah, I think for me, the toughest thing I try to look at is, you know, like how the roster is constructed, the likelihood of like blowing it up, because I feel like there's a lot of wins in a division that come at the back half of a season, and there's always that team that gives up and, you know, moves the one year guys off their roster, and like we're having a completely different conversation of like what records look like, some getting inflated by that benefit and that team getting deflated by moving so many pieces. And
over in St. Louis, that I think would really seem more gutting than it might actually end up turning into, just based on who we have and position player wise. We sure cannot develop pitching, but by God, can we develop position players? And we have more coming that's creating more log jams. And our middle, like we have a guy, Thomas Ajayi, we just got him from Texas for the Monty deal. That dude's gonna be a stud. Another middle infielder. Add that to the Win, Edmund, Donovan, Gorman mix, and then all of a sudden, okay, now. So that's why when I use my argument for the over, obviously the Cardinals have a lot of chips to use, which tells me that if the time is right, the Cardinals can probably enter almost any trade discussion to have for whatever pitcher could be available. For example, if the Cardinals wanted to, we don't know what organizations target, of course, and what skill set they want, but as far as just overall package, the Cardinals could have got Dylan Cease. The Cubs probably could have got Dylan Cease, but maybe not. I don't know, the White Sox for you guys, but regardless, the gunpowder is there. And the argument for Cardinal fans all offseason is, well, you probably should use the gunpowder now because you don't know where you're going to be at deadline time. Well, if the Cardinals are competitive around deadline time, there is room in payroll. We have the pieces to acquire. The likelihood of adding to the top of the rotation with Sonny Gray would be higher around July than it seems like not now. So it's essentially, let's see how the division breaks. Maybe tread water. I think the first month of the season is going to be a tough one for the Cardinals. I mean, you got the Dodgers and the Padres just to start it out. Then I think you play Arizona twice mixed in there. I mean, it's going to be a tough month. But if you can tread water to open the season, have a decent May, get through June, and you're in the mix on it July, I think you'll see the Cardinals make an additional move. And you nailed it on the head when you said it all determines what Lance Lynn does. I think Lance Lynn is a very interesting kind of tidbit of what the Cardinals may and may not be able to do this season. Fun little interesting stat. I may not have it identical, so I'll leave it to you guys to maybe look it up after the podcast. But I think Lance Lynn won 13 games or something with like he had 13 quality starts and won, and six of them were quality starts. Either way, when he gets a quality start, he wins. And then when the Cardinals have quality starts last year, their record was incredible. I think it was like, but we didn't have a lot of quality starts, but when we got them, it was almost flawless. I think it was like 28-2. Out of everybody in the rotation, Lance Lynn had the most quality starts past 3 years. I believe this offense, I think wins are still overlooked or underlooked, if you would put it. I think wins are still important because you're winning ball games. I think Lance Lynn has the ability to really shine in this offense. Yeah, he's going to give up runs. He's probably going to give up some homers. I know he's in better shape, and I think he's going to be playing in a more friendly ballpark, and he's going to be playing with a potent offense. I'm not calling Lance Lynn a number two. Don't get me wrong. But is he going to be better than Lance Lynn of last year? I think he will be. And I mean, think
last
year
he was a very different type of number two.
Yeah.
he was tough.
I think if he has a quality season, if Miles Michaelis can be a solid number three. So you're not going to have a number two. It is what it is. But you'll have Sonny Gray, who's a 1A. And you'll have Miles Michaelis and Lance Lynn. If they can be solid number threes, Steven Matz then becomes the second tidbit. Steven Matz healthy, solid number three, can pitch it like a two at times when healthy. He can be filthy. He just hasn't shown it since he's been a Cardinal. But if we can get like Toronto Blue Jay Steven Matz, we're cooking with gas. Of course, right. That's, you know, shooting fish in a barrel. What will happen? What ifs? But this rotation doesn't look sexy at all. And I don't have extremely high hopes for them. I'm not going to, you know, be, pompous on a Cubs podcast and say I think it's going to be incredible. But I do think it's going to be better than last year. I think the offense has a way to carry it. I just think the over doesn't seem outlandish to me. I actually think the Cubs have a chance to hit the over. I wouldn't be surprised to see both the Cardinals, Cubs, and I'd even throw the Reds in there between that 86 to 89 range. Maybe one of them hits 90.
Yeah, I think like when you look at the division, that's been kind of the analytical joke of everyone's playing the win 85. And it really does feel that way. And
yeah, it does.
That, like, that feels like the number that everybody thinks is going to win this division, which, I mean, knowing that that's, you know, four games above the 500 mark, like that's or obviously much larger than that, but four games over 81 wins. Like, that's just, it is, it's really weird to think of like a ball bouncing a certain way. And yeah, I think one thing that you did bring up that I hadn't thought of with the Cardinals is, I think the Cardinals and the Cubs, both in different ways, are the most set up to make noise at the trade deadline, because both teams have, in some capacity, locked down spots in their rosters that players won't be moving from. You're not going to have a sell-off that we all see and like the bettors are seeing, and whoever addresses them the best is going to win this division. And that's, yeah, I think this has become a two-team race in the ability to, if you are in or around the division, like, yeah, the Pirates and the Reds and the Brewers are likely not going away, like, roster-wise, because there's not much to trade, but I don't
think... Out of it, you know, you could see someone like Lizardo become available. Yeah. If they're in it, they won't, so... Like, we don't even know who's going to be available at the deadline. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. The Cubs and the Cardinals probably have that gunpowder to make that move. And it seems like both of them are keeping it in their back pocket and seeing how the first couple months of the season goes. You look at the Cardinals with what's going on with the contracts we have, the players that we have, the superstars that we have. There would be no justification. And then after last year, there would be no justification of them being in the mix and not try to add at the deadline. And I'm sure the same would go for the Cubs fan base.
Yep.
If you guys are right there in the heart of it, there'd be no way that the front office and your ownership could pivot around the demand of adding to this club to put them over the edge. So that's the two things that the Cardinals and the Cubs do have. And I think both of them will end up playing that card at some point through, you know, the headline. And really, if we look at history and the needs that we could probably have, we'll our teams are probably going to be talking to the same teams.
Yep.
It's just, it's going to, the rivalry will bleed into trade talks once again.
Yep.
And let's go full circle. Unless the Cubs are unwilling to go above the first level of the CBT threshold, which they have treated as a cap. And that links our first conversation about money. David, thank you so much for coming on our podcast and talking Cardinals as we walk through the division to get a better idea of what to expect in 2024. If people want to find you on social channels or your podcast, feel free to use some time right now to advertise what you've got going on.
Yeah, I'm over on Twitter at Cardinals_live. We are also on YouTube, Heart of the Order podcast, Heart of the Order, at Heart of the Order. We like to say it's more than just a baseball podcast. We do talk St. Louis Cardinals. We do talk MLB. Episodes tend to go long sometimes, and we'll dive into talks about conspiracy theories and aliens, and we'll have fun with it. We also, you know, we've had some incredible guests along the way. We have all of our episodes cataloged. Feel free to go back. We usually post once every other week. We are not an every week or an everyday podcast. That's why they tend to go a little longer, because we segue a couple weeks into one full episode and break it down. And overall, just want to thank you guys for having me. It was fun. And hopefully we have good Major League Baseball to watch soon. I think we're, 9 days away from opening day now, and excited.
Yeah, absolutely. I am just... For me, I'm staying up tonight to play the 11 p.m. launch of MLB The Show, because I don't respect the idea that I still have two children and I'm not a child. So, I'm once again Candid Cubs. You can find me on every social media channel you can imagine, and maybe even some more, not only fans, as we have alluded to several times in the last few podcasts.
Only dads.
Only dads, correct. We are, I'm on Twitter as Candid Cubs, or X, whichever you prefer to call it, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and please take a look at the Bricks Behind the Ivy Reddit page, as we try to use that to organize some of our episodes and interact with more people. So check it out today. Make sure you like, listen, subscribe, wherever podcasts are at. Mr. Sean Chabon, where can people find you?
You can find me in the streets. No. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Hot Stove Cubbies. And soon to be seeing my first article on Northside Baseball. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, and I should probably mention that I'm right there as well. And as we're now a not only dynamic podcast team, but a writing team. So book us for your next child's birthday party, and we will bore them to death with baseball stats.
I'll bring balloons.
This has been another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy. Thank you guys so much for listening. Like, share, subscribe, comment, do it all. Find us on Twitter. Tell us how much we don't know about baseball. We love that. But thanks again. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.